this NPR station.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Loright. Coming up today, we're going to hear Florida This Week from this past Friday night. It's a roundtable discussion about state and local politics featuring several knowledgeable people from the Tampa Bay area. And as you listen back to the show, you can always email your comments into the studio while you're listening. Our address is dj@wmnf.org. Later on, we'll try to lighten the mood just a little bit, so stick around. This is WMNF in Tampa. Here is Florida This Week. Coming up next, Florida Attorney General Pam Bondi and fellow Republican Attorneys General have a first-round victory in their effort to overthrow the Affordable Care Act. A school security officer shoots and kills his family. A fight appears to be brewing over restoring voting rights to felons who have served their sentences. And President Trump's foundation is forced to shut down after numerous alleged problems, including one with a Florida connection. Political Insights next on Florida This Week. Welcome back. This week our panelists are Mike Deason is an independent journalist. Christian Ziegler is the Sarasota County Commissioner in District 2 and a Republican. Susan McGrath is the Executive Director of the Florida Consumer Action Committee and a Democrat. And Mary Shedden is the News Director at WUSF Public Media. Well, it's great to have you here. Thank you for coming.
Thanks for having me.
Well, Florida Attorney General Pam Bondi and some fellow Republican Attorneys General won the first round last week in their effort to overturn the Affordable Care Act, so-called Obamacare. A federal judge in Texas sided with Bondi and ruled the entire law was unconstitutional. The ruling came because a year ago, Congress eliminated the individual mandate containing a tax penalty requiring people to have health insurance. Previously, the U.S. Supreme Court upheld the ACA based on the view that the penalty was a tax and thus the law was valid because it relied on the taxing power given to Congress under the Constitution. But now the Texas judge says that without that penalty, the law no longer is constitutional. For now, the Affordable Care Act remains in place. The legal challenge is likely to go all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, where the future of such things as protection for people with pre-existing conditions will be decided by the chief justices. Meantime, even with the efforts by Republicans to overturn the law, the window to sign up for Obamacare just closed and Florida leads the country with the most people signing up for the program of any state in the nation.
So, Mary, it's been a long Republican dream ever since Obamacare was passed to overturn it. This is the first step toward doing that.
Right. And as you mentioned, Obamacare passed in 2010. They started rolling out plans in 2013, 2014. And the fact is that even with this this lawsuit, which has not changed the law at all. Even the White House has agreed and said this, everything's in place. You still saw 55,000 more Floridians sign up this year for health insurance. And I'm really intrigued by that because the budgets were cut so much for information, for counselors, so-called navigators, and yet more people are signing up. And I really think this is a sign that the bottom line is less about politics and more about people wanting health insurance.
Christian, I can remember a few years ago when it was passed, there was a lot of anger against it. It really energized the Tea Party movement a few years ago. What do you think about Obamacare? I mean, Mary's point being that a lot of people like it here in Florida. What do you think? Do you think the public wants it to be overturned?
Well, yes. I think what you have are, it's clear people want access to affordable health care, and the question is, how do you get there? And I think just looking at Obamacare, if you just look at the numbers, if you take a step back and you remove the parties out of the equation, look at the numbers, we have premiums that are two, sometimes three times more than what they were 5 years before Obamacare was implemented. Deductibles are skyrocketing. Options are going down, and, you know, I think it's over 50% of counties only have one option to pick from. So, you know, I know pre-existing injuries, that's something that we need to take a look at, and how do we cover that? And there's various ways you can. But when you look at Obamacare, it's been a failure. People are complaining about the cost of health care. I see it all the time from even many of my Democrat friends. Nothing is changing on that front. This bill did not bring affordable health care.
Christian, to me, this is the dumbest things Republicans can do. During the election, every Republican running said, yeah, we're not going to take away your health insurance. We're not going to take away your pre-existing conditions. People like it. The things that the Republicans don't like is the term Obama. This is just retribution for Obama. It is a popular issue. Republicans are going to lose if this is taken away.
People do not like seeing their premiums double, triple.
Nobody likes seeing their deductibles skyrocketing.
People like having options. People like keeping their doctor. They don't like being told what to do. People do want affordable health care. Obamacare, just the numbers, if you just look at it, has not provided affordable health care.
I think the jury's still out on this, and I think it's really telling that Governor Scott and Attorney General Bondi have not made any public statement about the Texas ruling. Florida's one of 20 states involved in the lawsuit, but she has not spoken openly about it at this point. I think it's a huge political question, because I think what Christian's saying is very true. Healthcare costs are an enormous problem, but how it plays in the political arena is going to be very different than how it plays in a pocketbook.
Susan, Christian makes a good point. The deductibles have been going up, premiums have been going up, but would it be fair to say that they were going up even before the ACA was passed?
So the premiums and the deductibles would have gone up more without the Affordable Care Act. The individual mandate would have kept them lower, but they would have gone up more. We can look at the popularity of the Affordable Care Act based on the elections we just had a month ago. Democrats ran on health care and the Affordable Care Act. It was the number one most important issue to voters. It exceeded immigration, it exceeded jobs, it exceeded the economy, and Democrats swept Congress because they ran on health care. People care about having access to health care, and the Affordable Care Act is the venue that gets it to them now, and people get it.
So again, go back to what I said originally. Democrats did not run on Obamacare. They did not run on the Affordable Health Care Act. What they ran on was access to affordable health care. And everyone agrees that's what we need. The question is, how do we get there? And this specific policy proposal that was enacted, if you look at the numbers, it did not get us there.
But in eight years, while the Republicans are saying we've got to get rid of it, they proposed no alternative.
Tell me what the Republicans put on the table and say,
okay, let's get rid of Obamacare and we're going to do this.
We have been pushing for years to get policies in place to where there's more competition that's available, where there's more options that are available.
There was no federal plan to replace it.
Christian, let me ask you. President Trump has promised to put in place a plan that would have lower deductibles, lower premiums, and more people would be covered. He's had the Republican Congress behind him for 2 years. Mm-hmm. No plan's been introduced in Congress.
Look, I think the last 2 years, everyone would agree, all we're hearing about is Russia and some of this other stuff that's being pushed by the left. And really, we haven't had a chance to sit down and govern and get stuff done. It's been complete chaos for the last 2 years. Meanwhile, the president has tried to enact stuff. When you specifically talk about health care, you have the individual mandate has been eliminated. You have the short-term plans have been extended. And if you look at the projections for Obamacare, we've had double-digit increases since it was enacted every single year. Next year, they're looking at, with the individual mandate being eliminated and the deregulation of some of this bill, it's only going to go up about 3-5%, they're saying. This is the first single-digit expected increase since it's been enacted. But that's from President Trump.
My question to Susan goes back to you. Before the ACA was passed, weren't premiums and deductibles going up at alarming rates even before the ACA was passed?
They were going up, but look, when you have 2-3 times, some people 3 times their premiums going up, that is a shock value. I'm just telling you, I see Democrats I go on Facebook on my news feed. I know they're Democrats or my friends, and they're complaining about their cost of health care. Mm-hmm. And it's an open discussion. It's an open frustration, something that I've never seen before.
All right. So bottom line on this, does anybody here think that the Supreme Court, when it gets to the Supreme Court, is going to overturn the ACA, given the conservative makeup of the U.S. Supreme Court.
Roberts was the deciding vote last time. Right. You've got the four votes that voted for it, and Roberts was the deciding vote. I would suspect that he would stay with his original vote, and it'll be a 5-4 vote, even with the new justices.
Christian, what do you think?
Well, we'll see. I mean, these justices, it's one thing is about the Supreme Court is a lot of times you can't predict it, so it's hard to take a step back and try to decide. I would hope, because we do have a conservative Supreme Court, that they would rule and support this ruling and continue it, but you never know until it really happens.
All right. Well, the government in Tallahassee and President Trump have embraced the idea of putting armed people on K-12 school campuses. This in the wake of the February massacre at the high school in Parkland, Florida. But this week in Hillsborough County, something went horribly wrong with one of those armed school resource officers. A longtime sheriff's deputy, a one-time officer of the year, who was assigned to Valrico Elementary, Terry Strawn, used his handgun to murder three of his family members, his wife Teresa, his daughter Courtney, and his six-year-old granddaughter London. He then took his own life. London attended Valrico Elementary. The killer had passed extensive background and psychological testing within the last year. The murders raise an important question. If we allow armed people on elementary and middle and high school campuses, and if they undergo extensive screenings, can we ever be completely sure that they themselves won't become a danger to the innocent students and teachers on campus? Christian? What do you say? This incident that happened in Hillsborough County, is this indicative that we should not be arming people on campuses?
No. Obviously, it's very sad what happened with the deputy there, and we're going to have, you know, incidents like that happen anywhere in society, really. But when you look at schools, what I'll tell you is this is something that hits me personally. Andrew Pollock, who lost his daughter in the Parkland shooting Meadow, he's a good friend. Since the shooting, he's become a great friend. And I talk to him on a daily basis. And when you look at the details of what happened in that school shooting, and I'll give you kind of a quick timeline, but this is why it's so important to have someone inside the school that's armed. The first floor, when the shooter went into the first floor crews, you can't really do too much about what happened there. He killed 11 people on the first floor. That was in the first about minute or so. But then you had two individuals that worked at the school. You had the assistant football coach and you had the athletic director rush into the school. Both of them were shot and killed. Both of those individuals, I know their families, both of them, I'm willing to bet, would have been willing to be armed. They would have been able to engage the shooter on the first floor. But what happened is they went in there, they got shot, they got killed. The officers stayed outside the school, so they weren't any help to the people inside the school. That shooter went up to the second floor, and then that shooter went up to the third floor after 3 minutes. So we had a minute and a half from the first time he was engaged by someone that was unarmed, where that shooter had a free-for-all and killed another six people on the third floor. Those individuals, which Andrew Pollock's daughter is one of them, should not have been killed. They should have been saved if you would have engaged the shooter. Because what happens in a shooting is when you have a shooter and you engage a shooter, I don't care if they have an AR and you have a pistol, when you engage them, it stops the shooting. They have to draw attention to who's challenging them. And at that point, they're either going to get killed, they're going to bunker down, get arrested, or the shooter's going to end up giving up at that point.
Mike, in the wake of what happened in Hillsborough County, is Christian right? Should we be arming more people in schools?
I think we're comparing two different sets of realities. The fact that a police officer ended up, someone who was working at a school, killing his family, and this is the second one in Hillsborough County, you know, this past year, has nothing really to do with the debate of whether we should be arming people in schools. I'm not sure that I think that the staff should have guns in school. But the police officers who kill their family members don't usually randomly shoot other people. So I don't think you can look at this and say that that's the case. In fact, I saw a statistic today that police officers are more at risk from suicide than being shot out on the street. I think that if we are going to have people in schools, it should be people who are trained like resource officers. I feel much more comfortable with a former deputy or a former police officer than with a gym teacher having a gun.
And one of the proposals on the table, Bob Gualtieri is chairing a statewide commission right now, the sheriff of Pinellas County. He is going to come forward with a plan to put volunteer teachers armed in schools.
I don't like that. I don't like the teacher having it. I feel much more comfortable with a trained officer, a sworn officer, someone who's retired, or someone who's a school resource officer. I don't think that police officers who go off the deep end traditionally go after innocent victims.
Susan, what do you think of that?
So it doesn't work. Analysis simulations have shown that people involved in an active shooter cannot stop the active shooter. The FBI did an analysis, and 47% of law enforcement involved in situations with active shooters actually experience casualties. And this is law enforcement, which has the highest degree of training, the most training, and now we want to put people with far less training in our school systems and expect them to be able to perform. What happens when the SWAT team arrives and the educator has the gun? How does the SWAT team know who's the good guy and who's the bad guy? This myth that the NRA is perpetuating about a good guy with a gun stops a bad guy with a gun is a false premise.
This issue is going to come up before the legislature. We are going to deal with it again on the show, I promise. I wish we had more time. But many Florida election supervisors are telling the Orlando Sentinel that ex-felons are welcome to register to vote on January 8th, but others are waiting to see what Tallahassee does. Questions still remain about how to carry out Amendment 4, approved by almost 65% of voters in November, restoring voting rights for most ex-felons who have completed the terms of their sentence. Backers of the amendment and some county supervisors of elections say the language of Amendment 4 is crystal clear that rights shall be restored automatically on January 8th. But Governor-elect Ron DeSantis tells the Palm Beach Post that he doesn't think the law should go into effect until after the legislature meets in March and passes and sends him an implementing bill. As envisioned by the writers of the amendment, the process of getting voting rights restored should be simple. A prospective voter would simply check a box that reads, "I affirm I am not a convicted felon," or "If I am, my right to vote has been restored." One issue facing supervisors is, what would happen if someone checks the box swearing his or her rights have been restored while still on probation or still owing fines or restitution payments? So, Mike, does the legislature need to get involved, or does the amendment pretty much say this is automatic?
The legislature and the governor don't get it. The reason that there are citizens' initiatives is because they are upset with the legislature not doing the will of the people. More than 60% of Floridians say restore felon voting rights. It passed. The legislature's out of it. They've been out of it for years on this issue, and that's why it had to go to a citizens' initiative. If I were the ACLU, I would find a bunch of former felons and take them to the Hillsborough Election Supervisor's Office on January 8th and have them register, because we have a mayoral election coming up in March. And I would say, okay, let them register. And if Craig Latimer doesn't, I would sue Craig Latimer, the Supervisor of Elections. I would, in mass, go and register those. The legislature had their chance for years and did bupkis.
Mary, just looking at the legislature, what's your take? Is it likely that they're going to get involved?
I wouldn't be surprised given past behavior, and I look to the medical marijuana amendment that passed several years ago, and that has been a process that has been bogged down by the Department of Health and other agencies, and it's a difficult thing to implement, and I'm not going to disagree with that. But when an amendment, if an amendment is clear, and the citizens have voted for it, I think that is the will of the people, as Mike was saying. But I really am skeptical because of past behavior with amendments.
But there's a difference between medical marijuana and voting rights. They had to set up a whole system from the vertical monopoly of the dispensaries and the growers and how it would all be. So it wasn't as clear cut. Yeah. This is pretty simple. Felons have their rights restored. They get to register. They get to vote. Go to the supervisor, register, vote.
Yeah, and I take issue with that. The principle is the same. It's the will of the people that supersedes the will of the legislature and the Republican administration. It doesn't just speak to medical marijuana. It speaks to class classroom size. It speaks to the water land conservation amendment that voters passed. There, this is part of the Constitution. If our friends on the other side of the aisle want to be the party that strictly adheres to the Constitution, they can't cherry pick about when they do not.
So, Christian, you're going to get the last word on this.
It's one of the first times I've heard a Democrat actually say follow the Constitution. But what I'll tell you is, just looking at this, in Sarasota, we had all the election officials from around the state, Republicans, Democrats. They all came for a conference, and it was clear in there this issue came up, this amendment. And what do? We don't have rules. We don't know how to implement this. We need some guidance. And that's where the legislature, that's all they've said that they need to do, is come in and lay out some criteria, make sure everyone's on the same page, because, you know, the way Florida's set up is you have 67 election offices all operating independently. However, when you have a mandate from Tallahassee, or this time from the voters, they need to make sure everyone's on the same page and they're doing it legally. Otherwise, they will get sued and they will get into legal action. So,
you know, the Orlando Sentinel story on this said that some supervisors of elections are going to go ahead and January 8th are going to sign people up, and then others, as you said, have questions. But I think there's a sizable number of supervisors that are just going to go ahead and say, January 8th, we're going to do it. Well, this week, President Trump agreed to shut down his charitable foundation for what the New York Attorney General called persistently illegal conduct.
The New York AG's office said it had discovered a shocking pattern of illegality involving the Trump Foundation, where Trump used the charity's money for personal and political purposes, everything from legal settlements for his private business to buying portraits of himself. There's a Florida angle to this. Florida Attorney General Pam Bondi's Political Action Committee received a $25,000 donation from the Trump Foundation. Nonprofit foundations are not supposed to donate money to political candidates. What's more, the donation came as Bondi's office was considering whether to launch an investigation after receiving almost two dozen complaints against Trump University. Her office never started an investigation. New York State did, winning a $25 million judgment for people who say that they were ripped off by Trump's school. Trump's foundation says the donation to Bondi was a mistake. It did pay a fine to the IRS. Bondi says she did nothing wrong and that an investigation by the State Ethics Commission backs her up.
Susan, are there any lingering questions about whether or not Pam Bondi, our attorney general, looked the other
You're
way?
You're kidding, right?
I'm asking the question.
This is the ongoing legacy of Pam Bondi in the state of Florida. So first of all, she says she didn't know her staff was investigating Trump University when she took the check. Let's think about that for a minute, right? She didn't know that her staff was investigating this. So either she doesn't know what her staff's doing, or she's not being completely honest. She also says it happened before she was in office, and he didn't really do anything wrong anyway. So you look at states like New York, who are able to bring back the victims $25 million. If Pam Bondi had done her job, the victims of Trump University could have had some fair compensation instead of playing politics with someone that we know she's cozy with.
All right. Does Christian, you want to?
Well, it's just, look, Trump Foundation, everything that they're looking at and talking about was before he took office. He actually tried to shut it down before he was sworn in. They wouldn't let him. Looking at that, how it compares to the Clinton Foundation, it's just interesting to see how fascinated you are with the Trump Foundation. The Clinton Foundation was something that was an active pay-to-play while her husband was in office, and then while she was in the U.S. Senate. And you can clearly see that, because once she lost the race in 2016, the donations dipped 58% because they didn't get their access.
Well, wait a second, Christian. He's taken money and paying for his son's Boy Scout entrance into it, buying pictures of himself. This was sleazy. This was just downright sleazy. Even some of my friends who are Trump supporters have admitted to me that was just sleazy and dumb. And so that's on his fault. Pam's an attorney. Now, she told me in her office once, right after this whole thing broke, she says, Donald and I are really good friends, but she should have known, as the Attorney General of the state, this was not something that should have been accepted.
Christian, I would imagine too that there are U.S. attorneys that lean Republican and state attorneys general that lean Republican that could follow up on the Clinton Foundation
if there's wrongdoing.
Yeah, but it's just, I mean, here we're talking about a Trump Foundation, what happened years before he was president, and there still was not the same outcry. Like, we're having a whole segment on this.
Well, let's see, two years after he took office, where was the session
when Clinton was in office and when Clinton was running for office?
Well, before we go, what other news stories should we be paying attention to? And Christian, let's start with you.
Yeah, I think the issue of the day is the wall. And what's going to happen? Obviously, we're waiting on the Senate to find out, is the Senate going to deliver the votes or not? If not, we're going to have a shutdown. And then I think what's interesting there is, how do we get the government back up and running, and who's going to, you know, drop or cave first, right? Yeah. So I think it's a very fascinating discussion. I think it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. And today, or later today, it'll be interesting to see how much they fight for the wall funding or not.
All right, Mary, you're on the big story.
I have to give a shout out to the team at WUSF News. We put out an 8-part series this week on affordable housing called Growing Unaffordable, because we kept asking the question, why are all these luxury apartments being built in our communities? And we dug into it in Hillsborough County, and it really spoke to the fact that there's just a lot of money. People want to help affordable housing, but there's money on the state level, a trust fund called the Sadowski Trust, and billions of dollars have been moved from that trust fund since the 1990s from affordable housing to go toward a number of issues. Last year, it helped pay for parkland. So the question is, does the state of Florida really want to address the issue of affordable housing?
You'll find it on the WUSF website.
Yes, WUSFnews.org.
All right. Susan, you're on the big story.
So we are on the one-year anniversary of the Trump tax scam, and Speaker Ryan gave his farewell address this week, in which he said he regrets the ballooning deficit that he left the country in. We would remind him that the Trump tax scam will add $2 trillion to the deficit over the next 10 years. So maybe this should have been a part of the conversation.
All right, Mike, you're on the big story.
There's a politician with great name recognition that is considering jumping in the Tampa mayor's race, paying the $9,600 fee, and has quietly been asking friends whether he or she could get in, because this candidate thinks nobody has really got traction and has to make up his or her mind by February 18th.
Who is it?
I was sworn to secrecy. Never reveal my source.
The field's not big enough. All right. Well, thank you all for a great show. Thanks for watching Florida This Week. Your comments are always welcome. Please write us at ftw@wedu.org.
Well, that was Florida This Week from this past Friday night. And my panelists on that show, Mike Deason and Mary Shedden, were the journalists. And Christian Ziegler, who's now a county commissioner in Sarasota, was the Republican on the panel. Susan McGrath with the Florida Consumer Action Fund was the Democrat on that panel. And you can see the next show this coming Friday at 8:30 on WEDU TV Channel 3, the PBS station in Tampa. Well, we did get some comments about the show, and I'll read them right now. Liz writes this: I'm Liz from Spring Hill. I've written before on the subject, and I'm going to write it again to give you some facts instead of the rhetoric that I'm so tired of hearing from Republicans that weigh the ACA because of the Obama name and have been hypnotized to the lies that are spread around these circles. The first fact, writes Liz, is that I have held in Obamacare policy since they rolled it out in the 5 years that I've had coverage. There's been some ups and downs in the premiums as the market found its way. I personally have Florida Blue, and they have an incredible array of policies that are affordable. And as a matter of fact, my premium for this year is going back down to the level of the year that it was rolled out. That said, this needs to be expanded for income levels over me and above me, and also below me with Medicaid expansion. I benefit most from this being a small business solo practitioner owning a massage therapy practice. And before this, I had no access to the healthcare market other than catastrophic care, which was nothing. I'm going to tell you that I'm also partially responsible for signups going on in this area, because I've been working with my Florida Blue agent, and I've been getting my friends and colleagues signed up on life-saving health care that they all need. That's Liz's email from Spring Hill. Liz, thank you. And Michael wrote this comment about the show that we all just heard. Michael writes from St. Pete, your GOP county supervisor from Sarasota got away with murder on Friday's show. Typical Republican tactics, repeating half-truths, assertively interrupting those who disagree, and droning on to keep his more polite critics off the air. Every point was addressed to him for his take. He dominated the show, running his tapes and talking points, full of himself and full of blank, writes Mike in St. Pete. All right, Mike, thank you for that. And if you want to comment about the show that we just heard, you can send an email into dj@wmnf.org. Well, in the next hour, we're going to play the original radio production of what's become a Hollywood classic movie, a classic movie for this time of year. We're going to play It's a Wonderful Life in the next hour. Sean is on vacation, so we're going to hear Jimmy Stewart and Donna Reed and the whole gang do a radio version of It's a Wonderful Life that's coming up in a little bit. It's a Wonderful Life has quite a controversial history. I'll talk about that at the top of the show at 12 noon. But let's hear Jimmy Kimmel. This is a classic now. This is Jimmy Kimmel's take on what would happen if Fox News was in charge of producing a film like It's a Wonderful Life. Listen to Jimmy Kimmel's take on that.
This Christmas, rediscover the heartwarming story of the sleepy, economically backwards town of Bedford Falls.
Nobody ever changes here, you know that.
And it's one extraordinary citizen, Henry Potter.
I may lose a fortune, but I am willing to guarantee your people too.
This capitalist had a dream to transform Bedford Falls into a modern entertainment and business mecca, creating hundreds of new jobs. But one man would stand in his way.
You remember me, George Bailey?
Draft dodger George Bailey and his socialist building and loan.
We've got to have faith in each other.
Will Henry Potter's common sense reforms win the day?
What does that get us? A discontented, lazy rabble instead of a thrifty working class?
Or will George Bailey succeed with his scheme to redistribute wealth?
They had to wait and save their money before they even thought of a decent home? Wait, wait for what?
How far will Bailey go to destroy free markets and economic progress? How low will he sink?
Where's that money, you silly, stupid old fool?
This Christmas, enjoy a classic as it was meant to be understood. Fox News presents Mr. Potter and the Commies of Bedford Falls.
That's from the Jimmy Kimmel Show. You can see it on his website. Their take on what would happen if Fox News were to make a film like It's a Wonderful Life. We're going to play the radio version of It's a Wonderful Life with Jimmy Stewart in the next hour right here on WMNF in Tampa. So stick around. Charles in Tampa writes, why is it that more than 2 years after the election, the Clintons are still the benchmark for what is and is not acceptable behavior? If they did something terrible, then it's okay for Republicans to do it. Apparently, the Republican platform includes the concept that two wrongs do indeed make a right, writes Charles in Tampa. You know, I do think that the question about whether or not Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton's foundation did anything wrong, that should be decided by attorneys general across the country or the U.S. attorney, if need be, maybe Congress, and Congress has been looking into the Clintons for years. Congress could ask that a special prosecutor be appointed. But if there's no investigation, and the Republicans have been in control and been able to call for an investigation, then I think it's pretty fair to say there's probably nothing there. Now, it could be that there's something there, but the Republicans have been in control. They could have asked President Trump and the Justice Department to do a special prosecutor. That never happened. Ted writes this regarding the Clinton Foundation. The thing that bothers me the most about the Clinton Foundation is the sale of F-15 fighters to Saudi Arabia, who donated $1 million to the Clinton Foundation when Hillary was Secretary of State. Qatar also gave Bill Clinton $1 million for his birthday, writes Ted. Ted, thanks for that. And I think it's really up to you to make up your own mind, too. We try to present a lot of different ideas here on WMNF, and then you've got to decide. We're not going to tell you how to think. We're going to. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa. Here's somebody who says, "Is it my reception, or are you having broadcast problems in South Tampa?" I don't think we're having any broadcast problems in South Tampa, although I don't know. Hey, let's listen to a little bit of holiday music here. First of all, we're going to hear Randy Rainbow. He did a. He's a comedian, and he did a fake interview with President Trump the other day. And he used the great song, My Favorite Things, from Sound of Music, right? This is a Randy Rainbow having a conversation with President Trump about President Trump being in the dumps this holiday season.
I know, it's crazy. Yeah. All right, listen, I gotta go, but call me later.
No, I'm not calling you.
Not you, sweetie. Okay, all right, you too. Bye.
Are you ready?
Yes, and thank you so much for joining me, Mr. President. I hope you have been enjoying the holiday season so far.
I will tell you, I'm extremely upbeat. The White House is running like a...
defenseless young child being tear-gassed at the Mexican border?
Well-oiled machine.
Oh, mine was just an expression.
It's doing really well. I have great people.
Speaking of criminals, this is a very big week for the Russia investigation. Memos about Michael Flynn, Michael Cohen, and Paul Manafort, three high-profile defendants, are scheduled to be filed by special counsel Robert Mueller.
It's a scam. There was no collusion whatsoever. And the whole thing is a scam.
Really? Because word on the street is that you're getting pretty scared. Well, when anything bothers me or my entire family is about to be charged with treason, I try to think of nice things. I mean, there are so many things that make you happy.
And there are certain things that I don't like.
Oh, let me think. Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens. Destroying the First Amendment. White nationalists. Big fake tits.
Is that enough?
Brutal dictators and cold-hearted liars. Tyrants and traitors and climate deniers. $5 spray tans with under-eye rings. These are a few of your favorite things. Burying tax returns after you file them. Tear gassing migrants for seeking asylum. Big fat ass buckets of fried chicken wings. These are a few of your favorite things.
I did nothing wrong.
Blue collar workers all backwoods and beefy. Giant hamburgers with extra kofifi. Siding with Saudi Arabian kings. These are a few of your favorite things. When your friends flip. When your day sucks and your hair looks bad like right now, just blame all the victims and praise all the schmucks, and then you won't feel so sad.
How long has this witch hunt gone on? It's gone on for what?
KGB playdates and absolute power. Porn stars and playmates who charge by the hour. Puppets at Fox News who dance on his strings. These are a few of his favorite things.
I did nothing wrong.
Long-winded tweets with no spell check corrections. Raking up forests and stealing elections. Facts that he fakes and fake bone spurs and slings. These are a few of his favorite things.
There was no collusion whatsoever.
Firing staff who won't come to his defense. Signatures on non-disclosure agreements. Lock her up! Chants like his bass only sings. These are a few of his favorite things. When the Dems fight, when your friends lie, and when Mueller's close, just take a cold shower and have a good cry, and then you won't feel so gross.
The news about me is largely phony.
Judges who fly into partisan rages, solar eclipses and children in cages, hookers who pee on your face till it stings. These are a few of his favorite things.
Fake news.
Red MAGA hats that you had made in Taiwan, smelling that new wife smell after you buy one. Lawyers who hide extramarital flings. These are a few of his favorite things.
I think I'm doing a great job.
People who cheer at your anger and meanness, dreams about having a normal-sized penis. Hannity's voice on your phone when it rings. These are a few of your favorite things. When your life sucks, or for God's sake, when you're about to snap. Take comfort in knowing at least you some hate. The rest of us feel like
fake news.
Randy Rainbow, they're trying to console President Trump in a fake White House interview. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa. Ron in Venice writes this. When a person is found guilty of committing a felony, they are given a sentence to serve as punishment, a debt to society. Once that sentence has been served, that person's debt is paid in full, and his or her civil liberties should be restored. When it comes to the Affordable Health Care Act, politicizing the issue is the issue, and the health insurance industry has a stranglehold on Washington, writes Ron. And Ron goes on to write, putting armed guards in schools as a means to resolve gun violence in schools is insane. It's just as insane as the idea that if there was armed security in the nightclub Pulse in Orlando, that massacre would have been stopped. When someone starts shooting a gun in public, in a public place, people begin to panic, and the scene becomes complete chaos. Armed security could not safely quell that level of pandemonium without escalating the situation. Most highly trained police officers agree that you cannot just start shooting into a crowd as a means to stop a shooter. That's Ron's email in Venice. You know, in fact, there was an armed guard at Pulse in Orlando, but that the presence of that armed guard didn't stop that massacre. Well, this is WMNF in Tampa. I'm Rob Lurie, and let's play another song right now. This is a more traditional holiday song. Here's Sean Colvin doing Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas.
Christmas future is far away. Christmas past is past. Christmas present is here to stay, bringing joy that will last. Let your heart be light. From now on, our troubles will be out of sight. Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Make the Yuletide.
Hang a shining star above the high.
us now.
Sean Colvin, and Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. Mark writes this email. He says, I agree with your last emailer about the Republican on your Friday TV show. I complimented a Republican guest of yours from a few weeks back, but not this week. Too bad for them, as he represents them poorly. This is Mark from Brandon. This is his opinion. And he says, and if you celebrate Christmas, I wish you and your family a very Merry Christmas. Mark, thanks for your email. This is WMNF in Tampa. In the next hour, we're going to play the original radio version of the film It's a Wonderful Life with Jimmy Stewart. That'll come up in the next hour. Sean is on vacation, so stick around for that. At the top of the show, I'm going to just give a little bit of background to the political context of It's a Wonderful Life. It's got a very interesting political context. Hey, speaking of politics, here is Steve Earle, Christmas time in Washington.
Christmas time in Washington. Democrats rehearse getting into gear for four more years. Things not getting worse. Republicans drink whiskey neat. Thank your lucky stars. They say cannot seek another term. There'll be no more FDR. I say home in Tennessee, staring at the screen, an uneasy beating in my chest, wondering what it means. So come back, Woody Guthrie. Come back to us now, till house in paradise, and rise again somehow. You run into Jesus, maybe he can help you out. Come back, Woody Guthrie, to us now. Followed in your footsteps once back in my traveling days. But somewhere I fail to find your trail. Now I'm stumbling through the haze. But there's killers on the highway now. Man can't get around. So I sold my soul for wheels that roll. I'm stuck here in this town. So come back, Woody Guthrie. Come back to us now. Jailhouse from paradise. Rise again somehow. If you run into Utah, maybe he can help us out. Back, Woody Guthrie, to us now. Woody, there's foxes in the hen house, cows out in the corn. Unions have been busted, their proud red banners torn. But if you listen to the radio, they tell you all is well. But you, me, and Cisco know it's going went straight to hell. So come back, Emma Goldman. Rise up, old Joe Hill. The barricades are going up. They cannot break our will. Come back to us, Malcolm X and Martin Luther King. We're marching into Selma while the bells of freedom ring. Come back, Woody Guthrie. Come back to us now. Two eyes in paradise.
Darlene Love there, and you're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. And we want to thank Anonymous in Bradenton, who made a contribution of $35. They like the traffic jam, helping us reach our end-of-the-year goal. Thank you, Anonymous. And thanks to Sheila in South Pasadena, made a $100 contribution. She likes the public affairs shows on WMNF. Sheila, thank you so much. And thanks a lot to Rob in Plant City, made a $200 contribution. He likes the Florida Folk Show. And if you want to help us reach our year-end goal, you can make a contribution online at WMNF.org. Frank Knox has been our phone producer today. Stay tuned, because in the next hour, we're going to hear the original radio version of It's a Wonderful Life. This is WMNF in Tampa.
His second wife, Marinelle. Of course, he brought his new wife, Kay. He talks all about AA. ain't smoking while the stereo plays. Noel, Noel, the first Noel. Turn the ball game on. Mix margaritas when the eggnog's gone. Send somebody to the quick pack store. We need some ice and an extension cord. A can of bean dip and some dying rights. A box of tan.